So my name is Rick Flores. I'm the Director of Horticulture and Steward of the Alma Munson Relearning Program at the UC Santa Cruz Arboretum and Botanic Garden. The best way to identify coast live oaks is if, because there are many oaks in California, but the kind of telltale field identification of coast live oaks is if you get a mature leaf and you look at the underside, there's venation on those leaves. And in the part where the veins kind of shoot off from the main vein, there's this white fuzz there. Some people refer to it as like hairy armpits or something like that. But that is like the telltale sign of coast live oaks. If you see that hairy fuzz in between the main veins and then the like auxiliary veins that are coming off the main vein, that's how you tell a coast live oak. You know, oak woodlands were stewarded by native people for thousands of years prior to European contact. And so some of the things they did was burn. They would often burn oak woodlands. What happens in sometimes in oak woodlands is if you get too much leaf litter on the ground, there's an insect that can develop in that leaf litter, and then it causes harm to the acorn harvest. And so native people would burn like the leaf litter away and stuff underneath the tree to prevent those types of diseases from coming. And then they would, you know, during the acorn harvest, which is generally in the fall, they would use these long poles that they called knocking sticks. And they would stand on the ground and reach these long poles up into the canopies of the trees and basically knock on the branches to make the acorns fall. The processing of acorns is a very time-consuming process. So the first thing, obviously, you have to do is collect and harvest the acorns. And then you have to shell them. And then you have to, on some of the nuts, there's this like red skin on those nuts, and you have to peel all that red skin off. And then you have to pound those acorns into a very fine flour, which takes quite a bit of time. From there, then you have to leach that acorn flour. So leaching, there's a lot of tannins in acorns. So leaching means like running fresh water through those acorns. And so they would run fresh water through those acorns to kind of take out the tannins and stuff. And from there, they would use what's called the hot rock method to then boil the acorn. So with the hot rock method, you create a fire. You want to use oak wood or manzanita or madrone wood because that's like the hardest dense wood and creates the hottest coals. And then you put these certain type of rock in the fire. And so you heat those rocks up and you have your acorn flour with water in a bowl here in California. Those bowls were all baskets really made out of plant materials that were watertight. And then you fish out the rocks from the fire using kind of like these big tongs. They're almost like giant chopsticks made out of redwood saplings. You dip those rocks in fresh water and then you put them in your basket. And then over time, the water in the basket starts to heat up. When those rocks cool down, you take out those rocks, you fish out more rocks from the basket. And over time, after you do that a few times, the water will actually start to boil. And that's how they cooked acorn flour. The acorn flour was never really eaten by itself. They always incorporated animal fats, nuts, berries, and seeds in it to it too as well. The other things that oaks were used for culturally is you can get an oak sapling like that's still like green wood, and native people would make what they call these loop sticks out of them. So they've basically like gently kind of bend them into almost like a spoon shape and then tie it off at the end, and they would use those sticks to stir the rocks when they were in the cooking baskets and things like that as well. Shrubs, a lot of our native geophytes which are things like brodeas and calcordis will grow underneath oaks. Our native geophytes are also known as, Indian potatoes or wild onions. So they were another really culturally important harvest for native people. Things like soap root, which was another really culturally important plant, can grow underneath oaks. Some perennials, irises, grow underneath oaks. Our native huckleberries grow underneath oaks. So they provide a lot of habitat for native shrubs and perennials and annuals and birds. Birds will nest in acorns. They provide shade, during hot, dry summer months for herbivores and other animals as well, like acorn woodpeckers. You'll often see sometimes quail flocks kind of foraging underneath oak trees and things like that. Corvids, like jays also. It's kind of interesting because the jays will actually get an acorn and then go actually plant it in the ground, like in some random place. And I think they do that because they're kind of like mimicking the leaching. Like they put it in the ground so that the tannins can be leached out of it. And then they go back later and dig it up and can eat it after that. But inevitably, they forget where or when they planted some of these acorns. And so they actually disperse, the acorns and create, new oak trees and things like that as well. Ground squirrels will eat acorns, so they provide a lot of ecosystem services for wildlife in the area. So bay trees, a wonderful aromatic tree of California. You can actually use them in culinary just like you would kind of the European bays that you find in stores and stuff, although you only want to use like half the amount because they're a lot stronger. The nuts were typically harvested and eaten by native people too. You could do this today. I forget what it is, but you can get the nuts. They almost look like tiny little avocados, but you peel the flesh off those avocados and you're left with like a shelled nut. And you let those dry, and you can actually stick those in your oven at like 250 degrees for about 40 minutes. And so you're roasting them, and then after that, they're edible. They were known as peppercorns, too. So, and you can make a flour out of them and make other dishes out of them as well. So another really important tree for native people. Our coast redwoods are some of the tallest trees in the world. They can live hundreds of years. Historically, there were not as many of them in the landscape as we see today, because we know that native people were burning the landscape. Scientists have actually done this really interesting work to determine how often a fire was coming through redwood forests. And what they did is they looked at old kind of growth redwoods, old growth redwoods that have been cut down, and they cut the old stump and then looked at the tree rings. And so when redwoods burn at a hot enough rate in the tree rings, they leave this small crescent-shaped fire scar in it. And so by counting the tree rings and understanding how old the tree was and then looking at where the fire scars happen in the tree rings, what they determined in the Santa Cruz Mountains, a fire was coming through redwood forest roughly every 7 to 15 years. And that indicates anthropogenic burning. But because of that, because fire was coming through so regularly, it would kill basically all the young seedlings of oak trees and leave, the biggest, most mature redwoods. So what the Spanish first described here was an open park-like forest. It was filled of these old, mature trees that were dotted by shrubs and things underneath. But they didn't record these kind of thickets of redwood trees and stuff that we see today, and that's due to the lack of fire. And we know, you know, oak trees and redwoods live for hundreds of years, so they have to have been able to survive, you know, droughts at some point in time. But, you know, I saw a talk a few years ago that was really interesting, and what researchers had found on oak trees in Southern California is that it's not the drought that's hurting them. What's hurting them is the heat. So, you know, theoretically, you know, you can have a normal rainfall during the winter, but if you have a very hot summer, and it was, the research suggested like a certain number of days above 100 degrees is what's really affecting the oaks. So it's not necessarily drought, because we know they live a long time and can withstand drought. It's the heat, and, you know, which speaks to the way climate change is affecting our native plants here, that is, you know, killing the oak trees. Yeah. The needles actually are adapted to our fog. So, you know, when fog passes through, it condenses onto the needles, and the needles are, the shape of the needles are designed to kind of catch that fog, condense it into water drops, and then the water drops, you know, fall into the forest floor, which provides water for a lot of, you know, other plants and stuff within the redwood forest. So that was a really important part of the function, other than, you know, photosynthesis and things like that to keep the tree alive. But what we're experiencing today is, because of climate change, there's less and less fog happening on the coast, which is, seems to be affecting the kind of distribution of redwoods in their area. There's a whole community of what's called mycorrhizae and fungi underneath the soil. There's been a lot of work in like forests in Canada, and what they're finding is that these underground kind of fungi communities are the ways in which trees are communicating with each other. And it's really fascinating that like there can be an actual like mother tree in the forest that is communicating and sending nutrients to other trees in the forest. And not only nutrients, like warning signals, things like that too. Like there's a disease coming, you know, we need to start doing physiological things to protect ourselves and stuff like that.